Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me today is my co-host of almost a year,
Chad Metz. It is almost a year.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Comic-Con fastly approacheth. The event that, as we described last year, is kind of a culminating event for geekdom. They have them all around the country, but this is the New York Comic-Con and San Diego Comic-Con are the two biggest. And, you know, we're starting to learn more information as we are about a month out from Comic-Con about who's going, who's not going, and who's bringing what. So Chad, what did we learn this week about the potential Marvel presence? I know we got some indications last week from Scott Derrickson through Twitter that they were going to be in San Diego for Comic-Con, and Gunn pretty much followed that up shortly thereafter with his little indication. But I think that it was officially put out there by Gunn this week that he was going to be taking Pratt and going to Comic-Con.
Yep, it was officially yesterday. Yesterday, Guardians of the Galaxy wrapped, and at the end of it, thanks to technology, we got a Facebook Live video of Gunn giving his end of the movie speech with Chris Pratt there, and they both gave their little speeches. And at the end, Gunn said, I can officially say that we're coming to Comic-Con, I'm coming, Chris Pratt's coming. I think he said Batista was going.
Most of the gang, he said.
He said Batista, and then he said most of the gang. So I'm assuming some people might not show up. Maybe Zoe Saldana, because she's busy being blue.
Yeah. Hey, it's June. They passed the April point where they're going to have to get those tax credits.
I hate that movie. But it looks like...
Well, she also has to go promote... She's probably going to be there anyway, because she has to promote Beyond, which is going to screen at Comic-Con.
So she'll be there, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're gonna be there, and they're gonna bring some fun stuff. So I'm assuming we get at least some footage. I would say not a trailer, but this is the same crew that brought us a trailer after shooting for a week and a half. So who knows exactly what we're gonna get?
Yeah, the footage they showed at Comic-Con, the first Comic-Con that they were at, the only Comic-Con that they were at, because they weren't at the one the month before their release. It was what, a 14 movie? Yeah, it was 14, August of 14. So they were at Comic-Con 13, and they showed the lineup sequence.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they brought for that. Hopefully, at this giant panel, it'll be interesting to see. I will always remember sitting there hitting refresh on my Twitter feed at Comic-Con 2014, and like, Jim Vegeta from IGN tweets out Feige's words that he starts the panel with. He said, we're here to talk about 2015. And then everybody was like, well, we'll see how long that lasts. And then, of course, the entire panel was just Ant-Man and then Age of Ultron. And that was their two 2015 releases, so he was true to his word. I'm interested to see with the fact that Doctor Strange is wrapped production and is deep in post-production at this point. Guardians has now wrapped. Spider-Man Homecoming keeps adding to its cast.
Yeah, they'll start filming by the time Comic-Con comes
around. And then Thor Ragnarok, which, you know, Tom Hiddleston's not against showing up to a Comic-Con and making some noise.
That was fun.
So, I mean, are we going to get 16 and 17, or are we just going to get 16?
Are they
going to wait till D23?
Well, by having...
Because D23 can show Spider-Man stuff.
Well, there's not a D23 this year. I keep forgetting. It's like every other year. But...
next year... that's right, because next year will be the week or 2 weeks before Comic-Con.
Well, they won't be at Comic-Con at all. Right. By them bringing Guardians, they're going to do 17, but is it just going to... Are they going to end with Guardians and just do Doctor Strange and Guardians? I just can't see them not doing anything for Spider-Man, mostly because that's Sony's part of it. Now that I said that out loud, I'm kind of interested to see if they'll just lump it in with Marvel, or if Sony will be like, no, this is Spider-Man for the Sony stuff. I don't know why they wouldn't do it with Marvel, but...
Well, I mean, I think Sony's going to have enough time on their hands trying to get some good publicity out there during Comic-Con and trying to win over supporters for a couple of different projects that are very iffy. So Sony's going to have their own hands full. Let the Marvel and Disney marketing machine work for you.
I would. I mean, just use it all.
We are renting you.
Go do your thing.
Go do your thing.
I would... I can't see them not doing Spider-Man. Thor, I don't think we'll get much of anything. If we get anything, maybe they'll show us like concept art of Hulk and Thor and be like, that's it. That's all you get.
See, maybe we could get Cate Blanchett walking out in her headdress as Lady Helena.
No, that's too much. We got D23 for that. We can get all extravagant for that. This time we'll just let you see. And if the concept art is like Hulk, close enough to the World War Hulk that everybody wants, just show them the concept art. Fanboys will go absolutely nuts.
The way they did for the Hulkbuster armor.
Yeah. Everybody will go absolutely nuts and be like, that's all you get till next year. And that'll work.
Indeed, because that will be a November 2017 release. Yeah. So they will still be a little ways out, whereas Homecoming will be coming out like in that time period of Comic-Con next year.
Because
didn't they move it to like July 6th?
Yeah, so yeah, it's early July, so it'll be before D23 and Comic-Con. So yeah, I can't see them not with a Spider-Man, the Spider-Man being in the hands of Marvel proper. I cannot see them not bringing that to a con, and this is the one.
Because so much goodwill was built up and so much adoration was built up for Tom Holland, for that character. You could potentially, although I don't know how much juice you would get for it, you could wheel Keaton out there to say, hey, I'm Vulture, and get some run on that. Potentially have Keaton and Holland on stage at the same time, maybe. You could have Brolin come out and confirm that he's, you know, going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. You know, there's a lot of you could have Goldblum come out and talk about his role in Thor Ragnarok. There's a lot of things you can do that will placate the fan base and put you in a position to win Comic-Con. Because as of right now, you know, I didn't think they were going to go at all. Now that they're going and they're bringing their heavy hitters, it seems to me that they were inspired kind of by Suicide Squad and by DC saying, we're going to, like, here is 15 different events we got going on for Suicide Squad. Like, here, if you're dressing up as Harley Quinn from our movie on the floor of the con, we're going to have a costume contest. And here are our props from our movie. And here, Jared Leto's Joker tattoos were inspired by real-life drug lords on Instagram. And, you know, we're going to have a full panel with all these stars coming out to talk to you about this movie. And David Ayer is going to come out and make bad jokes about rap battles and Marvel versus DC again. And drink way too much caffeine. Like, so, you know, DC announced that in their full-fledged push for Suicide Squad 4 weeks out, and then Marvel's like, yeah, we're going to bring Doctor Strange, Cumberbatch, and, you know, probably Ecto-4 and Tilda Swinton, and then we're going to bring Chris Pratt, Bradley Cooper, Vin Diesel, and, you know, all the gang, and we're going to promote Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and maybe if you're good, we'll have Tom Holland swing around.
I don't think it's a reaction to that, because you know, I always thought that D23, I forget, that it's every other year. So I just thought it was this year. Like, they'll bring something because they're not going. They've already said they're not going next year. They'll bring something, but it won't be too much. Since there is no D23, and who knows if after next year maybe D23 becomes an every year thing, and they'll never go back to Comic-Con. I think they may have had this in the works and be like, all right, this is the last one. We'll give them... we'll give them enough. And now thinking about it, I know we're going to talk about it later, but with all of these Spider-Man casting announcements, and we haven't... It's starting to shoot at the same time as Thor, but we already got the Thor
cast list.
If they haven't released it yet, why not just wait till Comic-Con? Especially if some... if people like Donald Glover, somebody that is known in Spider-Man lore, you say it then in front of all the fanboys and get the big pop, I think that that's probably going to be the play.
You know, I mean, I just wonder how much juice they could get out of Keaton walking out. Because, I mean, that to me, it doesn't have the pop that, say, you know, I remember a couple Comic Cons back when the Joaquin Phoenix news dropped. And, like, the possibility of, like, that dude walking out on stage and, like, I'm Doctor Strange, y'all have a nice con now. Like, I know what kind of a run that Marvel would have gotten off of that. No matter what DC or Sony or Fox or anybody else did at that con, they would have won going away. The problem is, now that the nerds and the people you're going to Comic-Con to appease know that Keaton has been talked to, walked away, come back, and is pretty much signed, sealed, and delivered, how much juice could you really get out of that announcement at Comic-Con?
What? I think you can still get a run out of it just because you're bringing him in front of a room full of nerds. And let's not forget that most of them still hold him in very high esteem for being Batman. So you're going to walk out the original Batman that they've probably never seen before in real life and like, oh, he's here, and he's going to be a Spider-Man, and he's going to be, maybe they swerve us and he's somebody else. Like, I'm going to say this, I don't believe this to be true, and I don't want it to be true, but they swerve and say, oh, he's Norman Osborn. They lose their shit, and then everybody's...
Actually, I want him to be Mysterio.
Yeah.
Actor. Actor. An actor who gets injured. Raimi was going to do him.
I can't wrap my head around Mysterio because he really wears a freaking aquarium over his head.
There's a fishbowl.
Oh.
And has a scarlet green and purple cape.
And I don't think you hide somebody like Keaton's face. And there's going to be... I mean, there's ways you can do it with Mysterio where you can see his face. But I don't think you hide his face. Now, we don't have this on there, but in promoting Now You See Me Too, Woody Harrelson's like, I want to come on over to Marvel. Stick his fishbowl on his head. I like Woody Harrelson. But if you're going to make Mysterio, let him... He can be Mysterio. Keaton... I don't really want Keaton to be Vulture. It just kind of fits, but...
Yeah, I mean, the irony there for me with Keaton is just like, hi, I played Birdman. I spent an entire movie riffing on how horrible comic book movies can destroy your career. And, like, I was basically mimicking the fact that, you know, I got defined as Batman for, like, the next 10 years of my career.
And, 20.
Right, and after I did Jack Frost, I just had to, like, I'd had enough and I walked away because I was, you know, couldn't be taken seriously as an auteur. And, you know, now I'm going to come back and take all the capital I have from Spotlight and from Birdman and use it to go do Spider-Man Homecoming.
But it's a different time now. Everybody's doing these movies. Before, it's like...
Helen Mirren's in Fast and the Furious.
That is insane to me, but... Whatever.
Academy Award winner, Helen Mirren.
I mean, between all of these, how many Academy Awards have we gotten in all these kind of genre movies? So everybody's doing it, whether they're just doing it for the paycheck or they're like, I kind of like this kind of stuff.
Anthony Hopkins is in Transformers.
He's doing it for a paycheck and his grandkids. I can tell you that right now. Because that's the only reason he's open is for a paycheck and for his grandkids. Okay, Anthony Hopkins, that's fine. I don't, like, this movie can crash and burn, it won't, and he'll still be fine. Unlike when there's Batman in the 80s, if it crashes and burns, well, even if it's successful, you're still stuck as the dude in the plastic cowl.
Alrighty. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. We're about a month out. What are they going to do? Who are they going to bring? What footage are we going to see? What information are we going to gather from that event? It's going to be an interesting thing to see. And as we mentioned in the course of our discussions, there has been some casting news. You know, with Donald Glover, former star of Community, I believe.
Yes.
And also The Martian, which he was very good in.
Yeah, I liked him there.
And Martin Starr, which makes me super happy because, of course... The guy who is writing the Spider-Man Homecoming script is John Francis Daley, who played Sam in Freaks and Geeks, which Martin Starr was his best friend, along with Sam Levine in Freaks and Geeks. So it would really be interesting to me if you could pull Sam Levine in here in some kind of way. We could have the three of them working on this movie together. It'd be really awesome. Super excited. If you've never seen an episode of Freaks and Geeks, do yourself a favor. Paul Feig, of Ghostbusters fame or infamy, however that turns out. Judd Apatow of 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, Funny People, and This Is 40, producer on the Amy Schumer movie.
Trainwreck.
The cast included Seth Rogen, James Franco, Jason Segel, what's her name? The girl that showed up, Linda Cardellini of Good Burger fame, as well as Scooby-Doo and Mad Men. She was also in, she was the sister. And, of course we had, as I just said, Martin Starr, John Francis Daley, and Sam Levine, in a terrific show that was clearly falls under the banner of Brilliant But Canceled. So if you ever do get an opportunity to see that, take a look at that show, please do. But it would be really fun to me to have that humor from that show, which is set in high school but still deals with dramatic elements, played out in a Spider-Man movie, which would be really, really cool to me. What are you thinking casting wise? Because one of these guys has got to be the Tinkerer, right? If they're doing Vulture, Tinkerer fits with that concept.
The other guy, Logan Marshall Green, when his announcement came, they were like, he's in talks to be the other villain. So I guess he would be the Tinkerer if that's the way they're going. I'm glad you knew who Martin Starr was. I've never seen Freaks and Geeks. I know, terrible. Sure. But I think it's on Netflix. I just haven't watched it yet.
It is on Netflix. This is where a generation of comedians got their start. Yeah,
I didn't know anything about it. I just keep hearing about it. And then I looked at it and I'm like, all these people in this?
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, all of you.
Yes. Yeah. And not to mention Paul Feig and Judd Apatow, who were the showrunners and directors on those episodes.
Yeah, so I just have to get time to go and watch it.
Yeah, it's brilliant, and Martin Starr is also in currently
Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I've never watched that one either, but I know lots of people are liking it, and it's funny. So I mean, his casting fits in with the whole lighthearted comedic kind of Johnny Hughes thing.
This fits. I mean, all John Francis Daley had to do was pick up the phone and make a phone call because he's been in. I knew he was in the Vacation movie. He was. He was in the Vacation movie. Martin Starr was. I don't know that he was in the other two Horrible Bosses movies, which John Francis Daley co-wrote.
Oh.
But he was in Vacation. So it's really simple for those two guys who've been friends since they were like teenagers to make a phone call and say, "Hey, you want this small role as a stoner chemistry teacher?"
Yeah, everybody's thinking he's going to be a teacher. Yeah.
Yeah. And Glover could be the principal.
Kenneth Cho, I didn't put that on there because I don't remember if we talked about this one or not. The guy that was in the first Captain America movie, Asian guy.
He's going to be the principal. We did talk about that.
Yeah. So Donald Glover, I don't know.
Aunt May's biracial boyfriend?
He's a little bit too young for her. And he's a little bit too old to be the other person that everybody keeps spouting off, which is Miles Morales. I'm like, he was too old when this first came about.
2011 would have been that. 2010, 2011 would have been that casting process.
Yeah, and he was in his late 20s then. Donald Glover is around my age. So he's too old to be Miles. Miles, I know we don't have to follow the comics, but Miles is younger than Peter. Peter is like 15 in this movie. Miles is probably eight. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe, now he could be Miles' uncle. Who they made the Prowler. He's a comic character. They could do that. I kind of hope he's not. I kind of hope he's. My guess would be if they're aging everybody down a little bit, maybe he's Robbie Robertson from the Daily Bugle. He's Jonah's right hand, and he's the one that hires Peter and all that stuff. So you get him in all of these movies. And
yeah. You gonna explain to me how a 15-year-old kid is writing for a newspaper in this day and age?
He never wrote. He took pictures. He can't take pictures now because everybody has camera phones.
They
can't take
them away.
They worked around in the Ultimate Comics, which was in the early 2000s. They worked around this very issue. He went there with pictures. Jonah told them they were crap, but they were the first ones in Spider-Man. So they took it, but he was like, he was good with computers, and they all were old people, and they sucked. So he was like, can you work on the website? Yeah, you're hired. And that's how he ended up working at the Bugle.
Okay. I mean, that whole concept is going to be interesting. Again, the John Hughes inspiration is near and dear to my heart, but, I mean, that's a hard tone to pull off. I think it'll be kind of like their Ant-Man being a heist film. Like, it'll have the spirit and the intent, mm-hmm. but it won't be, something ripped beat for beat that's truly in that genre. My central concern comes back to John Francis Daly as a writer, only having done R-rated comedies at this point. The PG-13 sensibilities are a little bit different. Didn't Spider-Man curse in Civil War? Wasn't he the character who got beat?
Yes, he did.
So, I mean, maybe they can let him, push that envelope a little bit harder. But again, it's a Sony movie. Sony's looking to make this movie for as broad an audience as possible, make as much money as possible. We know next to nothing about the plot or where it's going to take place as far as timeline is concerned. So, and again, the Horrible Bosses movies and Vacation Reboot did not make a lot of money at all. The two Horrible Bosses movies did okay for when they were released, but that was because they were good to okay comedies, mm-hmm. released in the fall. So they were counter-programming to all of the award material that was out. They had a niche audience, Charlie Day, Jason Sudeikis, Jason Bateman. You know, they had name recognition that you could pull from. That remains my only concern is Watts as a director isn't very well known, doesn't have a very distinct style or tone to his movies, and John Francis Daly is, he's a comedy writer, he knows how to write comedy, but he doesn't have experience in the PG-13 world, so.
I mean, those are legitimate concerns, and, I know it's a catch-all, but.
In Marvel, we trust.
Yeah, I mean, until they fail, a few times, who's going to really doubt them?
This is true. That goodwill, faith, and credibility goes a long, long way. So let's move on to some other news. So Spielberg gives a very, 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 very long interview to The Hollywood Reporter. A lot of interesting tidbits coming out of this. He's going to be doing press soon for BFG. So,
that's right, yeah.
So I'm sure he'll get asked to expand a little bit more on some of these issues that he's talking about in this piece. A couple of different things came out. One was just how involved he was with JJ getting hired for Force Awakens. We knew the story of Kathleen Kennedy posing the question to him after he had turned him down, turned it down once, saying, I'm burned out, I've been working for 6 straight years. And then she came back to him with, who is Luke Skywalker? And that question intrigued him enough to sign on. But we didn't know was that Spielberg took JJ and his wife to dinner and tried to get his wife to agree to allow him to do the movie.
that's a nice move, Spielberg.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really nice little story there. And those two are so close. And Super 8 is a love letter to Spielberg of the Amblin movies of the 80s. Those two are so close, so it made sense that with Kathleen Kennedy and Spielberg's relationship, she was one of the founders of Amblin back in the day. She produced Jurassic Park. They have a very close working relationship for many years, so her his recommendation to her would carry a lot of credence.
Yeah.
And then it was just up to her to finish selling him on the concepts that they were thinking of using. And then he also, in the same interview, said that, you know, he wasn't on set for Jurassic World, but that Trevorrow sold him on story and sold him on his enthusiasm and passion for the project, and that he did see dailies every single day, and if he had seen something in the dailies that would have concerned him, he would have sent a memo or talked to Colin in some kind of way, but he was pleased with the film and pleased with the way that it came out and to the box office success that, I mean, who can really argue?
Yeah. I'm actually surprised about the dailies, because, I mean, I knew...
They broke the story. He broke the story. And according to everything we know, they conceived of this as a new trilogy. So where we had Jurassic Parks 1 through 3, although technically they don't acknowledge the events of San Diego or the events on Site B
mm-hmm.
in Part 3, they just acknowledge the events of the first movie. You know, we're going to get 4, 5, and 6. And, you know, Dr. Cho is... Dr. Wong, I guess, is going to play a more pivotal role in Jurassic World 2, which Trevorrow is not directing, as he's doing, you know, this small little film called Star Wars, which was also another recommendation to Kathleen Kennedy by Rob Marshall and Spielberg for him for Episode 9. So that came out of that conversation as well. And then, of course, we got the news about Indiana Jones 5.
He
clearly hasn't listened to our podcast. He clearly has not taken my idea to just have old Indy sitting in a chair somewhere telling a story about his younger days and casting a new actor as young Indiana Jones and doing the young Indiana Jones Chronicles as a movie,
which would be way better than watching 89-year-old Harrison Ford,
78-year-old at that point.
I might as well say 89. It's just all the same thing at this point. And with him being that old and running around, Spielberg felt the need to tell us that he's not going to knock off Indiana Jones.
No, he felt the need to say that because people were questioning. There's the rumor going around that his character is going to die very early on in the Blade Runner sequel. There, of course, we know what just happened with Force Awakens. So I think it was just a matter of, is Ford going around trying to kill off all of his iconic characters? And, you know, the difference is, while Ford doesn't really has been indifferent toward Blade Runner for years, and while he's been downright negative toward Han Solo for years, he loves
Indiana Jones.
Like, he literally was like, okay, George, we're not going to hold you to a, you know, put you in a chair and put your feet in water and threaten you with electrocution if you don't come up with a better story. We'll take the story about Martians and aliens and interdimensional travel and the Russians and, you know, escaping nuclear, fallout from a refrigerator.
Oh, man.
We'll take that story because we want to do an Indiana Jones 5. Yeah. That's just how badly we want to do it.
Man, that movie's so bad. I still want to see that one time. When the refrigerator flew, and he just rolled on out, I'm like, I'm done. But
the original working title was Indiana Jones and the Martians.
Because George Lucas had too much time on his hands,
or access to too many drugs. One of the two. I mean, this will be the first Indiana Jones movie not with a story originated by George Lucas. It was always Lucas came up with the stories and Spielberg directed the movies. This will be the first one that he's not even an executive producer on. So that's a humongous, momentous thing in my mind.
It is. They haven't said who's writing it yet, have they?
Yes. Spielberg's regular collaborator, who also worked on the script for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, will be working on this with him.
That's right. So, but he's worked on more than just Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
But
he's worked on several Spielberg movies. But, like, we want to talk about The Rock, and he's off promoting Central Intelligence, and, you know, about how he might be a cyborg or he might have cloned himself because of the amount of work that he's doing. Spielberg, like, did BFG and Bridge of Spies at the same time, and then turned right around and started working on on pre-production for Ready Player One, which he's now going to go shoot. And then after he's done with Ready Player One, he's going to move on to probably a version of West Side Story that he wants to do. And then after he's done with that, he's going to move on to Indiana Jones 5.
Okay.
And not to mention a Robo Apocalypse movie that may or may not end up getting made at some point.
Okay, so to put this in context, The Rock is pretty much starring in... he's shooting four or five movies this year. Pretty much 3 months a movie. So he stops one, literally hops on a plane, and starts the next one. He works for an entire year straight. And in between all that, he's promoting for his other movies and all that kind of stuff. So he really, like, literally, I keep saying, I don't understand how he sleeps. I don't understand how the man sleeps. So, but for an actor, you just go in, you shoot the movie for 3 months, and then you're done. For a director, you do all the pre-production stuff. Then you go in and shoot the movie. Then you do all the post-production stuff. Normally, you're looking at
2 to 3 years of your life.
Yeah. So, for what Brian just said, he shot... Well, granted, Bridge of Spies is a smaller movie. It probably doesn't take as much time. But still, Bridge of Spies and BFG, which is a heavy CGI movie, so it probably does take a lot of time. Pretty much at the same time. So that's... You can kind of overlap some of that. But that's probably still like roughly 3 years right there. Just those two movies. Now he's promoting for BFG, and then he's going straight into Ready Player One, which he's already doing pre-production on right now. And then he's doing two movies following right behind that. So we're looking
at... Indiana Jones has in May of 2019, the release date.
So that's 3 years from now. And he's squeezing in two other movies between that. Yeah. I say Steven Spielberg has beat The Rock.
Well, I mean, he took a little sabbatical after Lincoln before getting into anything else. So, I mean, he did get some rest in. And, you know, he does executive produce on a whole lot of things. And granted, he doesn't lend out his name as much as he used to. I mean...
Because he used to just put on everything.
Yeah, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, like a Steven Spielberg production, like freaking Tiny Toons is a Steven Spielberg production.
Yeah, and it's always the first thing I think of. I'm like... Even as a kid, I'm like, Steven Spielberg did this? Okay. I'm fine, whatever.
And he showed up in animated form.
He did, that's right. So at least we know he didn't just, like, take my name. He at least showed up to do some stuff.
Unlike he did with Transformers, which is here, take my name.
Yeah, you take my name, I think you should get this Michael Bay guy. That's, like, the worst decision he's ever made.
That and taking the direct, not holding Lucas to a heart, are a better story. Like, my favorite part, like, my whole thing about the Indiana Jones franchise is all three of those original films are based around an artifact that has some basis in reality.
Mm-hmm.
There is an ark. There was an ark in the Bible. There are people who believe that the ark does still exist, that it got buried by God somewhere. That is legitimately rooted in reality. There are all kinds of cultures, ancient cultures in the Indian subcontinent at the time, you know, for centuries, that have held rocks and different idols up as sacred in their religions that could very well have formed the basis for something like what we saw in Temple of Doom. And of course, we know that the cup of Joseph of Arimathea and the cup that caught the blood of Christ at the cross and the Holy Grail has always been a huge part of literary history, going all the way back to King Arthur and Sir Gawain and the Green Knight and all of that, Canterbury Tales. So, like, it had basis in fact. The only part of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull that is any basis in fact is McCarthyism. Which is a very, very, very tiny part of the movie, which is Indiana Jones getting fired from his professor's job because they think he might be a communist, and then him coming back and getting his name put back on the door.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only part of that movie that deals in any kind of reality or fact of that era.
This is a very good point. I never thought of it, but you're exactly right.
Like, that's part of what intrigued me about it. And again, I'll come back to this. I own the journal. There are small little stories in that journal you could turn into a movie. You could do a whole movie just based off of his relationship with Arthur Ravenwood. And what those, that what kind of a mentor, father-son type relationship those two had, and how Arthur was the forerunner to Indy, and he learned a lot of how to become who he was from Arthur, and how his relationship with Marion grew into what it became, and why they fell apart the first time. You know, all of those things you could do. That's why I'm hoping that they just hold firm to a good story and something rooted in reality.
I hope so too, because the Crystal Skull was... I remember the refrigerator, I remember the monkeys, and I remember the flying saucer.
The jeep that lands in the ocean and just can magically float.
I forgot all about that. Yeah, that was stupid.
Because they totally had that technology in 1950.
Yeah. Yeah, so overall what I'm saying is, that movie's terrible. It's awful. And
they did it because they wanted to make another Indiana Jones movie, and he was getting up in age, and the only person who benefits from that entire movie is Sean Connery, because he passed.
Oh, that's awful, but it's true.
So, well, I mean, it's good to know that he's not going to kill him off, but, I mean, you can't really kill him off because he drank from the Holy Grail, yeah. And therefore he has extremely long life.
Yeah.
So speaking of someone who has extremely long life, John Williams has announced that he will score episodes 8 and Indiana Jones 5.
I did not see either one of these things coming. I didn't even think about it for Indiana Jones. But for episode 8, I thought for sure they were handing them to Michael Giacchino. And he was going to go on and take it on out. Because John Williams is like 90.
Hans Zimmer.
Or I didn't think it was Hans. I think it was... I don't know if Giacchino is doing Rogue One, but I think he is. And I know he's done some other Disney things coming up. So I was like, they're prepping him to take over for John Williams. But for him to come back, these movies are... Well, episode 8 is next year. I can kind of, when you think about it being next year, I can kind of see it.
Because the scoring session would probably have to take place sometime in the late fall next year.
He can probably start working on it now. They're done. He can look at it and start getting ideas together. So yeah, I can see that because it takes place within next year. As you said, Indiana Jones is in 2019. So that's 3 years away from now.
Which means he can't start a scoring session for another 2 years.
Yeah. So the 17. My bigger question now hearing this is he going to do episode 9 and 2? I mean, they're both in the same year. You're doing 8. You're doing that one. Why not?
Unless God calls you home.
Unless God calls you home, which I hope not. but yeah, now I'm a bit of a completist now that he's doing 2 of them. And you're committing yourself to another movie in the same year. I kind of want you to do episode 9 too. Sorry, not sorry. Just go ahead and do it.
Well, I mean, it's not... The thing about it is, like, the scoring that he's going to do is not, you know... You're not going to change Rey's theme up all that much from what you started with in Force Awakens. You're not going to change Rey Poe's theme up very much. Like... The themes for the individual characters are not going to change very much. What will change is the individual settings and places and other parts of music that are going to be... You know, it's not just the opening crawl and the character themes. It'll be all the little small stuff in between. That'll be interesting. But, I mean, more power to him. I mean, the man is going to receive an AFI Lifetime Achievement Award, and he's already been given the Kennedy Center Honor and every other Lifetime Achievement Award that there is, and... Hey, there's still a guy out there who's older than him who's working because the guy that just won the Academy Award for Hateful Eight actually had to be helped up by John Williams in order to get to the podium.
Because I know what John Williams looks like, and I know he's really old. So when they showed that shot of them two sitting together, I'm like, really? This dude is really older than John Williams. Like noticeably older than John Williams. Like
earworm.
Like he's coughing dust. I can't remember his name, but, okay, all right.
So let's talk about some news that we talked about earlier in the show. Helen Mirren, yet another important person joining the Fast and the Furious world. As we learned from the cast photo that Donard Shaw, played by Jason Statham, is going to be in the movie. Last time we saw him, he was buried like 8 feet below and The Rock was teasing him that he couldn't get out. So he's going to be in the movie in some capacity. We're hearing great things about Charlize Theron's villain. And, you know, we know that Eastwood's kid is going to just kind of be there. Maybe as a Brian Connor replacement. And then we know that Jordana Brewster is not in this movie. And we know that they're doing some out there things with, it's cars literally falling out of parking garages and the stuff they're doing in Iceland. And
like jumping a car from a building to another building while still being intact and able to run and not dead.
Yeah. Works. Well, I mean, that they did that in Abu Dhabi. I mean, they not one, not two, but three buildings in Abu Dhabi.
Didn't they like skydive with a car?
Yes, they did. That was Fast Five.
Yeah, whatever. Do whatever you want.
Yeah. But I mean, like, it's impressive because she had talked about wanting to do it because she did the Red movies. She has an action background. She looks damn good for her age.
Yes.
And, you know, she does all her own stunts. She wanted to be able to drive, and I'm sure the role is small and minimal, but it's exciting, the possibility of having Helen Mirren in a Fast and the Furious franchise.
It's another one of those, I don't understand why you're here, but okay.
Why is Charlize Theron here? After what she went through with Mad Max Fury Road, to jump right back into a movie that involves a lot of cars and action sequences and set pieces.
I really think of just the desert and Tom Hardy. I don't know which one she would say is worse, but I think those are the two elements.
Well, they had to move production literally from Australia to Africa at one point because of rain. So, I mean, that was a hellish shoot, so no one could really blame her. But any thoughts on who she could possibly be? Is she, Dom's long-lost mother? Is she good guy, bad guy? Is she Charlize Theron's mother? Any potential thoughts there?
Maybe she's Charlize Theron's mother, but she's a good guy. I'll go with that. I'm going to hedge my best. I'm just going
CIA director, maybe? Yeah, something like that. All right. Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I like the idea of putting her behind the wheel of a car and just letting her go. So that should be interesting. And we got the news this week that Suicide Squad will officially be PG-13.
Yeah, and...
to the surprise of no one.
Absolutely nobody.
Although I'd be willing to make a bet there's an R-rated cut.
Probably. I understand Deadpool is a thing, but most of these movies have toys, which involve kids. Even the DC movies, which people don't like bringing kids to, they still involve characters that kids know. So at least say the kids can go in it. So this surprises nobody.
Well, I mean, it surprises me a little bit in that this is the first time Ayer's going to do a PG-13 movie. All of his directing efforts are R, which would seem to me to suggest that there is an R-rated cut. I've also noticed in the advertising that they've been doing in the marketing campaign, they are pushing the humor heavy.
Yes.
Like, they are really pushing the comedic elements of this movie, especially with Will Smith and Margot Robbie, which is interesting to me as kind of a complete 360-degree counterpoint to the way they marketed Dawn of Justice.
Well, the marketing for this movie, I don't think the
and they've been pushing the color palette, too. They've been pushing the loud, vibrant color palette.
Well, I don't think the reshoots for this movie were a reaction to Dawn of Justice. I think the marketing for this movie is a reflection of Dawn of Justice. Hell, the marketing for this awesome edition of Dawn of Justice, if you see it, like, normally, from the beginning shot of Man of Steel on, it's always been, like, the muted colors and on all the promotional things. They're, like, dreary and the dark stuff. If you look at the stuff now, everybody's lit up. It's all bright colors, the bright blues and bright reds and things. So, at least in how they're marketing, because that's what they can control right now, they've gone completely away from what they did with Batman vs. Superman because of the reaction of Batman vs. Superman. So, I don't know what that means. I don't think it's going to change anything for this movie. I think that movie, this movie is going to be what it is, but I think it's going to be, it'll have more levity than people probably would think. But it also shows the DC is like, okay, we get it. We're done.
Do they? Was Devin not pulled into a room somewhere and, like, given a harsh tongue lashing by Zack Snyder for all of his negative comments toward the DC universe?
When, and for those who don't know what we're talking about, Devin Faraci, we reference him a lot from Birth, Movies, Death. He and, other outlets have, they're currently, like, right now, on the set of Justice League. The same Justice League movie that we, for the past month, have been saying, I ain't seen nothing, so I don't believe nothing. They have brought them over to the set. They're on a set visit right now. The fact that it is Devin, when I saw that it was Devin, stood out because Devin, he hates Man of Steel. He doesn't hate Man of Steel as much as people think. He just says it's not a good Superman movie. But he hates Batman vs. Superman. And he does not like Zack Snyder on these movies. So the fact that they even got him to go over there is really interesting to me on all fronts. Like, once I found it out, I was like, I just want to be there to see what happens when he meets Zack Snyder. You could tell me, Chad, you're going to the Justice League set while Devin's there. And I'm a kind of lifelong comic book guy. I should be geeking out over all the things I'm going to see. I just want to see what happens when Devin and Zach meet. Because he was not kind is putting it mildly on his descriptions of Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder's Doomsday was the headline for his review of Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, I don't think he hates Zack Snyder, like, personally. He just hates his work as it pertains to these characters.
Doesn't feel like he understands Superman at all.
No, Zack is weird with Superman. Like, he'll say some things, and I'm like, okay, you kind of get it. But then he does other stuff. And I think the people around him get it, because I've heard Henry Cavill talk about him like, that's Superman. You got it. But you listen to him. So I would really like to see what that interaction is like, just because by getting Devin, it to me says, okay, we heard what you said about this movie. So, let us show you what we've done to fix what you said.
So, speaking of you know, limited engagement events in DC, you know, I promoted the Fast and the Furious 15th anniversary screenings that are coming out. The Ali screening, special event screening they had this past weekend. The Killing Joke, the animated movie with Mark Hamill as the voice of the Joker. And, of course, the adaptation of one of the most infamous DC comic books of all time. We'll have a one-day theatrical release. Your thoughts on this move by DC and Warner's to do this?
I'm happy that they're doing it. This would be the second Batman movie, animated movie, to have a theatrical release. I think, because of this movie, I think it'll draw a crowd, so it's smart to do. I just never thought they would do it until they actually announced it. Just because it's those animated movies, while most of them are well-respected, they're not the kind of movies that should be going to the theater. So for them just to do it, even just for one day, it kind of speaks to what they know, what they have with this movie.
Right. And, you know, Batman is one of the most popular comic book characters of all time. His movies always do relatively well. So, and it's a special one-night event engagement for the fans, which is always to me, a good thing that you can do to kind of help drum up support and rally the fan base. Although, this does seem to me like more something you could just do at Comic-Con. Like, just screen this at Comic-Con for a whole bunch of people.
Well, I think they are, but, you know, not everybody gets to go to Comic-Con, so it's like, here, all of you go.
Yeah. So, let's talk box office. I sent you a very nice, thorough, in-depth chart of the Superhero SmackDown of 2016, And, Chad, you want to tell me where X-Men Apocalypse ranks on those charts?
Let's see. If we... let's imagine we had a train, and there's the caboose, and we go, like, 20 miles back, and there's this bag that's just sitting there. That's X-Men. It's that bag that's way back there. It's not even funny how far behind they are from everyone else.
Out of 5 movies...
it's dead last. It's, what, it's... X-Men, Deadpool, Batman vs. Superman, Civil War. What's the fifth one?
X-Men Days of Future Past, X-Men Apocalypse, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, Captain America Civil War, and Deadpool. So that's 4.
That's 4, okay.
Yeah.
So still, dead last. The movie that Fox didn't want has, like, lapped it, which is Deadpool. Batman vs. Superman got destroyed critically, and they're not going to even come close to I can't remember the, I know they're not coming close to it either way, but I think domestically Batman vs. Superman has it by a bunch.
But even if you look at the head to head against Days of Future Past, it's lagging behind.
I didn't see that is a good comparison to look at.
It's like at the 5th, the 12 day total was somewhere between, like, Days of Future Past was at 197 and Apocalypse was at 129.
Yeah. But that's, again, I'm not the right person to ask because I don't like these movies.
Well, I mean, here, the problem that you have is, and this is part of my problem with TMNT, too. If they had kept the August release date and gone head-to-head with Suicide Squad, they would have made as much money as they did the first time.
Yep.
It's not a matter of quality. As Terry Schwartz of IGN pointed out, none of the Turtle Suit movies got reviewed very well. Like, it's not a matter of quality. It's about that fan base. And especially with bringing in Krang and the Thunder Technodome and
Bebop Rocksteady, this one should have made as much.
If not more.
Yeah.
And because it had more elements of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. You know, it can bring along the people who have to get past the fact that April O'Neil is being played by Megan Fox, and the fact that they tied Megan Fox's April O'Neil to the Turtles' origin by virtue of her father and Shredder working at the same plant in the day. Like, they can bring those fans along by, here's Krang, here's something you didn't even get in the Turtle Suit era. Like, it was so far out there. You know, we got Bebop and Rocksteady. Like, come back. And if you'd have done that in August against Suicide Squad, after Secret Life of Pets and Finding Dory, you would have made a whole bunch of more money.
They would have ran the end of August to September again.
Right.
But
this is baffling a move to me as Independence Day Resurgence deciding they don't want to be on Independence Day weekend.
I still don't get that. Unless they just figure they'll double down and get that weekend and then get it again on the 4th. But... no, everybody that wants to see the movie's going to see it the first weekend. But that's Fox making a bad... I mean, they're trying to hedge their bets, but it's not going to work out. It could have worked out better on the 4th. They could have had, like, a whole week, because the 4th is, like, on...
A Friday, I think.
Is it Friday?
Yeah.
It's some odd day. Let me see.
But, I mean, to me, like, there's all this talk about sequelitis. Well, The Conjuring 2 just topped the box office charts and is doing really well. It's not a matter of... I know Devin... again, we're going to reference Devin here. But I know Devin wrote a piece on Birth, Movies, Death about maybe people want sagas, not sequels. To me, the question isn't about... the number of sequels that we have. You know, Now You See Me 2 during less money than Now You See Me 1. When Huntsman Winter's War bombing out, all these different things, like, there are sequels that need to be made to properties that people want to know more about. Like, they want more of that world, more of that story. Then there are ones that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's a matter of quality. I will always rather go to a good to a great movie than a bad movie. And if you make a sequel to a bad movie, that's just dumb.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, Huntsman, the Snow White and the Huntsman, it was a June release. It made okay money, not great money. You made a sequel to it. The first one wasn't critically loved. The second, you know, you made a sequel to it anyway, and you were shocked to find gambling in the establishment when the movie tanked.
Yeah, it's
like it, you know, it doesn't work. And sometimes sequels are a matter of scheduling. Like I just got finished talking about TMNT. Like if you'd have put that movie in August, it makes more money and it does better. Conjuring 2 is as good of a movie as The Conjuring is. As well reviewed and has as high a cinema score and as high a Rotten Tomato rating as the original. So, you know, that interest level is there for that movie and for that franchise and that concept. It's not there for Huntsman in the Snow White world. So, I don't think it's a matter of, and for Now You See Me. Now You See Me was a surprise hit that May. And I personally think if you move that to Labor Day weekend, you make more money. So, I mean, it's just sometimes it's a matter of scheduling and demand. You know, you have to have a demand, and you have to have a rabid fan base. It's one of the reasons why we live in this world where remakes and sequels and adaptations are king. Because we've moved from a business model where, and this is me cinema nerding out, but we've moved from a business model that was predicated on actors and stars to characters being the focus of what brings people to the theater. You know, there are still a few movie stars out there who can literally open a movie, like DiCaprio, but though they're few and far between now. It's not like in the 90s where Clooney and Julia Roberts and Tom Hanks could just
Will Smith
could just be on the marquee and people would show up. We've moved from that business model to a business model of characters and stories. But also, like, if you want to look at it, because people, especially cinema nerds, get into this argument about comic book movies. And one of the reasons why they hate genre movies or dislike genre movies and comic book movies is because they feel like it is an adaptation, it's a remake, it's not something original. It's smothering the opportunity for original entertainment or original works to get out into the world. My argument to that is that those movies are still getting made, but they're getting made at a lower level for a lower budget in the indie world.
Yes.
You know, movies like Room are getting, you know, Room's a bad example because I think it was an adaptation, but small movies that have good concepts and are inherently good dramatic material, those movies exist. Good original material exists. But if I'm a CEO of a studio, and I have a choice between having to market this wholly original idea that in concept and character that no one's ever heard of before, or I have to spend time establishing a mythos and establishing who he is and setting the tone and getting people acquainted with the tenor of the movie and all of this stuff, or I can go to the bookstore, I can pick up one of these young adult novels for pennies on the dollar. In terms of, you know, rights fees, and I can turn it into Divergent where I make some money and I have a rabid fan base that is at least going to, every time that movie's out there, they're going built-in fan base, built-in audience. So, like, you know, people, like, we talk about the sequel-itis and all that and franchise-itis and all that, but in reality, like I said, we've moved from a place of movie stars to characters driving box office, and we've moved to a place where adaptations are just easier and more financially beneficial for studios to make than original content. And it's why you see Sony going out there and doing a Men in Black 21 Jump Street crossover. Yeah. I've got IPs. I need to milk as much as I can out of these valuable IPs that people know. Because people know 21 Jump Street, they know Men in Black, and they both have dedicated fan bases that will pay money to sit in the theater and watch my movie, regardless of how good or bad it is.
Yeah.
So, I don't think it's a matter of people being tired of sequels. I think it's a matter of people demanding quality in their entertainment. And also, I believe it's a matter of scheduling. So,
I pretty much agree with everything you said. This year in particular, is a cluster of movies that fit all those bills right in the same spot, which is why Neighbors 2 was in there,
which again, another sequel that made less money than the original, but there are places you could have put that movie on the calendar that would have made it more money, I think.
Yeah, they kept it there because that's where the original Neighbors came out. But unlike,
and the original Neighbors actually opened it right a week before Days of Future Past.
Yeah. So I mean, for like Neighbors, it's like, okay, you think you're gonna do the counter programming, and it was the first, people like the first movie, people like the second movie. It's not like Huntsman where people are like, I didn't want to see the first one. I damn sure don't want to see the second one. So I think it just got caught up in the wash with everything else. And that was just,
and that can happen very easily in summer.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what it was. They caught lightning in a bottle the first time with the first Neighbors. They thought, well, we got it with this go around. Let's put it here again.
And it's a better movie than Dirty Grandpa.
Yeah,
and it will. And to me, from what I've seen of the other movie, the prom date, wedding date movie, it's better than that. So, I mean, it's got an audience. It's like the Hunger Games, the Hangover movies all open on Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can make money there, but it's still just, sometimes you're going to just get too caught up. I mean, for goodness sakes, Nice Guys isn't even airing in Baton Rouge anymore. There's no movie theater showing it, and that movie was 4 weeks ago.
Was it four?
Three or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, three. Dang, I'm going to catch before I left. Yeah, that's another one. It just got, and there it is, another original movie. Here's your original movie. They put it in the summer. It's a smaller budget movie. But when you got to think about it, you're going to spend at least $20 million to market it. So if I'm a studio exec, it's like, okay, so we've got this nice original Shane Black movie that I've got to spend $20 million to market. Or I can pull out, let's say, like Divergent. It's not the biggest one, but it's a known title. I'll spend like $30 million to market this. And I'm going to make my money back, at least on the marketing for that. Whereas Nice Guys, it's a crapshoot because nobody knows what it is. And that's why it's out of Baton Rouge, because nobody knew what the movie was.
Right, and 70s noir, you know, Shane Black dialogue, Shane Black comedy, you know, Russell Crowe and
Ryan Gosling.
I mean, so that's more my point, is that, you know, if I have a choice between betting on a sure thing where I'm going to at least be sure of making my money back, or I'm gambling, I'd rather take the sure thing. And
every
that's
time.
And that's not to the detriment of, at all, to the detriment of original material. So over or under $100 million for Finding Dory? I know it did almost twenty million on Thursday alone.
Let's stick with the Disney trend and go over. I don't know if Zootopia made. I don't think Zootopia made over.
$82 million for Zootopia opening week. But that was the first week. That was March.
Yeah, March. And again, not a known property, but it is Disney. It had that behind it. I think Dory will make over $100 million. And
they won't compensate in one weekend what they lost on Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Oh, I forgot about that one. So Alice, yeah. So Idris Elba has been in all of the Disney movies that were animated or partly animated this year, because he's in Dory, which I'm like, really, dude, all of them, and he's in Zootopia, and he's Shere Khan, King of the Petty in Jungle Book. That was just my nice little, I'm seeing you too much in these Disney movies, or I'm hearing you too much in these Disney movies. And like, you could have just stuck him in Civil War. It could have been a clean sweep, but I forgot about Alice, just like Disney wants to forget about Alice.
Yes. I mean, it's got, like I said, it's got room to the middle of July when Secret Life of Pets comes out, And it's, you know, the brand, the decade that it has been, what, 12 or 14 years between?
I think it's like 9. It's not double digits yet, but it's close.
Well, I mean, there are still parents that have kids who they grew up on. You know, we both know people who, you know, set their kids in front of Finding Nemo.
You
know, for hours on end, you know?
I've done it. I've personally done it.
Right. So, I mean, that creates a whole nother generation who has a clamoring to see more of this world. So it'll be interesting to see if they could potentially have the highest grossing opening weekend for an animated movie ever, which would, again, just be toppling another Disney record with Toy Story. And Speaking of animation, more Shrek on the way. Your thoughts on that?
I barely caught that, I think, before I came over here. I'm like, I'm not surprised because... what else is Mike Myers going to do right now? Well, he could do more, but
he's choosing more Austin Powers.
Yeah, he's choosing not to do anything right now, so I'm not surprised. But I don't remember the last Shrek. I don't remember because I don't remember it. I don't think it's all that great. But I've seen the first and the second here recently because my daughter likes them and they're on TV, so I've seen those two. It could be fun. It's been some time, so maybe some of the fun comes back from not seeing it so much, but I don't know where they go. But I guess I'll be there by default.
By default. All right. So, Chad, the NBA Finals are going on. And there's a movie that has upped its marketing campaign. Would you like to tell the kind people about this movie that has decided that it wants to be a presence on the NBA stage?
You guys have listened to the show. You don't really need me to tell you what movie it is, but I will tell you what happened right before we started recording this. Right before we started recording this, because I'm a bit of a bastard, I pulled up a TV spot and I let Brian watch it. And I then said, you can't say anything.
I left you a voicemail last night.
I didn't listen. Did you hear? Oh, you heard, saw the TV spot, that TV spot. But I knew this one would set you off. And I was hoping you hadn't seen it until I could see you watch it. And let me tell you, it was worth watching you watch because I knew exactly when you got to that point. So I'm going to unchain him and let him go off on this movie called Ghostbusters, which I've seen multiple TV spots. There's a new trailer that features parts of the new Ghostbusters theme that I really don't have an opinion on this movie either way right now, but I'm going to hate that song. I'll just put that out there. And speaking of hate, we're going to just let this hate train roll on in the station.
So, Chad, you're telling me here that this movie does not take place in the same universe as the previous two movies.
Nope.
So, when TV ads get run with things sayings like a new team answers the call and things like we always knew they'd be back, doesn't the phrase we always knew they'd be back, doesn't that kind of intimate that like ghosts went away
and
they're coming back and that people actually remember that ghosts were a thing? Because that was the whole Paul Feig pitch, was that no one... he wanted to play in a world where ghosts had never existed before.
That's true.
So why is Paul Feig not talking to his marketing department? Or why has Paul Feig's marketing department... I can't even speak. How has Paul Feig allowed his marketing department to go Sarah Palin on him?
I don't think...
How have they strayed this far off of message?
I think this is, we can attribute this to the larger...
the fact that it was a lie.
It's not.
The whole thing is a gigantic lie. The man sat there and said, we are not having anything to do with the former piece of work. The two former movies, 30 years, has nothing to do with it. Oh, by the way, every original cast member who is living upon this earth and drawing breath has a cameo in this movie.
Except Rick Moranis,
who decided that he didn't want to come back and do a couple of days of shooting on a project he did 30 years ago because he's been retired for a while now. I think the last movie he was actually in was the Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves movie.
That's it?
Yes.
He needs something else.
So, you know, like, they're Slimer. They're Slimer. And not only is there Slimer...
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big piece of connective tissue that, like, directly ties back for 30 years. Like, it's iconic. It's bad enough that your logo isn't any different from what the original was. It's bad enough that you're using the same logo.
The same font and everything.
Same font and everything from the original from 30 years ago with the same blue lighting in back. That's bad enough, the fact that you have every living, breathing member of the cast back, with playing them by different character names. That's bad enough. But when I see a TV spot which for half a millisecond shows me, spoiler alert, a living, breathing, Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man running around the streets of New York City. Stay Puffed! Not a new generation's version of Stay Puffed, not a giant white creature with boobs that looks something similar to Stay Puffed. The literal Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man with his little sailor hat and his little Stay Puffed logo on the top. Really? Seriously? No, we do not do this. I am all for Paul Feig. I just expressed all of my love and admiration for Freaks and Geeks earlier in this podcast. And I'm all for doing a hard reboot with new characters and new storylines and a world which doesn't know ghosts and doesn't exist. I can live and breathe it with that idea. Good for you, Sony. You want to take this IP that's been sitting on the shelf for 30 years. You couldn't get Bill Murray to sign off on a Ghostbusters 3, so you're just going to go the hard reboot route. Yay for you for having the gumption to do that. Oh, wait. I'm going to get all of this nostalgia thrown my way? No, thank you. Call yourself Ghostbusters 3 if you have Slimer, Stay Puffed, and every living member of the original cast breathing on your set. Please stop trying to sell me on the idea of this being a hard reboot. This is not a hard reboot. And you know what is going to make me even more irrational on this subject? Is if when I'm sitting in that theater, because they will take my money. Gladly, they will take my money. When I'm sitting in that theater on July 14th, and I'm sitting there watching this movie, if I end up having all the living, breathing cast members on that set with the same character names from 30 years ago, and all of this has just been some elaborate John Harrison, I am going to lose my mind. If you are doing this, Paul Feig, if you are doing this for the shock and awe moment of turning this all around on the a-holes on the internet, like, haha, joke's on you, I didn't mean it the entire time. Now would be a good time to acknowledge this. You have no need to do it. You would endear yourself to so much goodwill if you had just called yourself Ghostbusters 3 instead of just saying, we're the new Ghostbusters. We play in a world where ghosts don't exist. We play in a world where these same actors, Annie freaking Potts is in the movie. Annie Potts hasn't been in a movie that wasn't a Lifetime movie or a Law & Order TV episode since, like, 2005. Like, she's in this movie, and she's not going to be playing the secretary. She's not going to be playing the person, the character she played hooking up with Rick Moranis in that movie. She's not going to play that person. She's going to play somebody different. Because why? Why? Stay Puffed, Marshmallow Man. Stay Puffed, Marshmallow Man. Slimer, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray,
Ernie Hudson,
Annie Potts,
Sigourney Weaver,
all in this movie, and we're not gonna call it Ghostbusters 3. I am beyond the pale. I am beyond the pale. I get, you know, you should have learned your lesson from what Force Awakens did. Force Awakens hit every beat. Like, literally having Han Solo walk onto a guardrail in the middle of a vast open space, a walkway with no guardrails, an open vast space where everybody knew as the eclipse was coming exactly what was going to happen on that rampway, because bad things happen when fathers and sons get together in Star Wars movies on open ramps in dark places, okay? Like, they hit every beat. They, like, even recreated shot compositions from A New Hope. And people ate it up, man. But people knew what was coming. If you want to do this, if you want to hit us with 90s nostalgia, and you want 80s nostalgia, and you want to hit us over the head with, like, reminding us of what was great about Ghostbusters, and reminding us about why we fell in love with the property in the first place 30 years ago, I'm okay with that. But you know what? State that mission statement, have that as your mission statement from the time you announce. Don't go through all of this just to pretend like you don't have anything to do when you have Slimer and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
So, being that I've seen Dan Aykroyd's cameo in the movie, I'm pretty... Okay, there's like 10% chance that I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's not Rey. I'm almost 100% sure he's not Rey. So, I think
it would be the greatest fake out in the history of cinema if he turned this around on everybody.
If he did, then that, like, whoever decided to like silence that is incredibly stupid, because there's very real chances that theaters can have seat burns and all kind of stuff, because. Like, I mean, when I saw the trailer yesterday, we're in a theater full of kids, but I hear the lady behind me, she's like, this is a hard sell, and she says some other stuff. I'm like, ah, and I know she's like, she was older than me, so I know she's in the range where she was seeing Ghostbusters, and to like completely just like, nope, I'm not even watching this. So, it just says that... I don't think you'd have that if the movie really is trying to do this fake out, and it turns out that the people there are actually the people we know from before.
And there's it's a torch passing movie, yeah, that pays homage and respect to the original.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have that. Now the
sexism would always be there.
Oh yeah, but I don't think we like that, there's always gonna be the sexism, but what's been caught up with the sexism is just people like you that are just like, I don't like what I'm seeing from this movie.
It's not that I don't like what I'm seeing. I'm okay with seeing a 21st century rendering of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I'm perfectly fine with that. In a movie that is called Ghostbusters 3. In which both teams are crossing the streams to take care of Ragon, or whatever the new bad guy's name is.
I'm just anxious to see what happens with this movie. Again, I really don't care one way or another. But like I said,
I get what Sony's doing. I get Sony has a definitive need to keep these IPs alive, and they couldn't get Murray to ever sign on to do a Ghostbusters 3. And poor, God rest his soul, Harold Ramis passed away. They would have kept trying to do that. Mm-hmm. But... you know, every time Ghostbusters gets re-released in theaters, it makes money. There's still a diehard, dedicated fan base for the cartoon, for the products, every Halloween those costumes sell. Like, there's still a active fan base for that movie. Like, I don't think that you would have these kinds of you would not had to fight the good fight if you'd have called it Ghostbusters 3. And I know Feig's on record is saying that didn't appeal to me. That's not what I wanted to do. But if this is what you wanted to do with all of the... And that's another thing that we can get in... that we're going to get into when we finally see this movie. How much of this was Sony retroactively going back after the initial backlash and saying...
put this in.
Look, we've got all these 40-year-old men who are angry... at you doing this all-female Ghostbusters, we need to placate them by putting in familiar elements into the movie.
I think if that was a Sony mandate, I think that's a mistake. I think keeping it as far away from the original as you originally want is right. The way to go.
You either do one or the other. You either do the torch-passing Ghostbusters 3 movie with your all-female cast, or you do a hard reboot that genuinely, legitimately doesn't acknowledge the past events in any kind of way. It keeps all the living, breathing members of the prior cast off of set. One of my things was, like, if you really want to set this movie apart, you know what, Paul Feig? You're from Massachusetts. Go set it in Boston. It's a different city.
Yeah.
And you can take it away from New York, but still keep it in the Northeast. That right there differentiates itself from the original.
Yeah.
There are small choices you can make like that that could have helped you in this fight.
Watching the TV spots and all that stuff now, I think this movie is going to be more in line with a remake instead of a reboot or a sequel. Because there seem to be a lot of the same beats from the first one that we're repeating this one. And then you bring in Slimer and Stay Puft, which looks like it's at the end. I think it's just going to be a straight up remake.
And I can get behind a movie that is trying to remake Ghostbusters in an all-female image if you call it a remake and not a reboot. It's all in the wording. It's all in how you pitch this. It's all in how you market it. Every single piece of TV ad and trailers, going all the way back to that first trailer with four scientists, which, by the way, was a mistake, going back all the way back to that, to this TV ad that aired last night during the NBA Finals, where it's like, a new generation answers the call. We always knew the ghost would be back. Like, that doesn't seem... That kind of material doesn't scream remake. It doesn't scream reboot. It screams sequel.
They've made a lot of mistakes with this in the wording, as you said. And I'm gonna think that Fee wants to make a remake. But...
I don't think so. I think Paul Fee wanted to do a hard reboot with an all-female cast in a world in which Ghost didn't exist. And I think that Sony was willing to let him make it until they got caught holy hell from the internet. And I think they got scared, and I think that they probably mandated some changes to his intent. And I think that we don't have necessarily a studio and a director on the same page. And I think the movie's going to suffer for that.
Oh, yeah, if they're not on the same page, it's going to be... Chances are it's going to be as bad as some people want it to be.
But what's crazy to me is that... Remember back months and months ago when Draft Day was coming out? And Reitman... Harold... Ivan Reitman was talking, having to come out and, like, settle talk down because people were getting all excited about the fact that there were these rumors about, through the Sony leaks, about Chris Pratt and Channing Tatum, or yeah. Chris Pratt and
it was Channing Tatum.
No, I don't think it was Channing Tatum. I think it was Ryan Gosling.
He was one of them. Yes.
It was like Gosling and Pratt. And a male-oriented Ghostbusters that would then link up with the female team and for a crossover movie, and we'd have an Avengers-style Ghostbusters cinematic universe. And people were talking so much about their future plans that he had to come out and kind of tone it down and say, look, we're just focusing on making the best one movie that we can make.
Mm-hmm.
That, like... It, none of that jives. If you have those kind of future plans for this property going forward, meddling in this kind of way, that kind of way, and issuing mandates in that kind of way, And taking the power away from your director, who made the initial pitch that you like so much, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I get it. I don't know. This movie is your Dawn of Justice. Actually, it ramped up some because, yeah, you popped up a couple of blood vessels with this one.
I mean, like I said, I get what Sony's doing. I get Sony needs to keep the IP alive. But there are better ways to do it. And there are ways that you can do it without causing all of this havoc. Because, you know, even to me, if you did a Ghostbusters remake reboot with Channing Tatum, Jonah Hill, Seth Rogen, and James Franco as the four leads. Or even if you want to switch out Jonah Hill for Donald Glover, and because you have to have one black guy in there, I don't think people would be as upset.
No.
Because I still think people would be upset if you were doing this rhetoric about it being completely wholly separate, new, never, ghosts never have existed, yada yada, and still put forth the Slimer imagery, and still put forth the we always knew there would be back, and still put forth the who are you going to call, and a new generation answering the call. If you did all these things the same way with the all-male cast, it would still be getting this kind of pressure from people like me. It wouldn't have the sexism and that corner of it, but they would definitely be having the PR issues that they are having from a generational standpoint.
Yeah, I can see that.
All right. Well, that'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. Chad, you are at
The Mets Theory.
And I am at BCW Tiger Fan. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you again next week.